So there are about 11 or more of us spread throughout the Midwest, what we sometimes refer to as the Midwest, in Chicago, in Iowa City, in Madison, in Urbana, Champaign-Urbana, in Carbondale. Through a series of conversations over a period of time, we found that we were living in the Midwest Radical Culture Corridor and that we wanted to go exploring and finding it, that it was something that already existed. But we needed to articulate it, we needed to find it, we needed to connect the parts, we needed to see the things that were there. Oftentimes the Midwest is thought of as this backwater, this place where nothing happens. Only corn comes from there, only backwards notions comes from there, only racism comes from there. You know, there are all these stereotypes of what the Midwest is. But once we started looking, we found amazing people building resistant culture in so many different capacities. So we wanted to name this in a different kind of way. One important thing, I think, in relationship to what both Peter and Rob were saying, and this notion of commoning, of finding the commons, we were talking about articulating the region from below, creating different stories of this region we lived in. Not just to have new stories, not just have a pride in this place, but to actually try to look at what's there, how it's being done, and how to counteract it in whatever ways we possibly could. So part of this notion, and I should say, actually, Brian Holmes is somebody over here, he's nodding his head, is somebody who's also working to find the Midwest Radical Culture Corridor with us. So the group is kind of expanding, contracting, of those of us looking for it. One thing about the commons and being able to common is to have the sense of self and a sense of community. To be able to do that in the first place, it's an issue of subjectivity, to see yourself as someone who commons. And I think that's been something that's been stripped from us, this ability to see our plights in common, to see that this stuff, this land is ours, or I mean, it's not really ours, it belongs to somebody else, but we can work to get it back in the hands of those people, we can work to make something different. Going too quickly through those things. So, to have the sense of commonality, you need to have some kind of relationship to others that produces this. Those folks who had a sense of the commons got their sense of ownership to the land, or their co-ownership to the land, because it gave them the capacity to survive, to produce their daily life. That's been stripped from us as well, this capacity to see how our daily lives are produced. Our lives now are produced through abstractions and disconnections from a commonality, whether it's energy production or food production. So part of the exploration of this thing called the Midwest Radical Culture Corridor is to interrogate what this place is, but also what our subjectivity is, what a new kind of sense of self can allow us to achieve and build in this place. So along these lines, we've been exploring. We've been getting out and asking questions. And Brian initiated the Continental Drift, I think actually in New York City to start, and it's gone to other places. But we asked Brian to come out and to drift with us through this place called the Midwest. I'm going to read this really quickly. The Continental Drift is an invitation to look at our collective existence on all the relevant scales. The intimate, the local, the national, the continental, and the global. Continental Drift is a mobile assemblage of people presenting their projects, observations, experiments, discoveries, and questions, and producing value through social exchange. The Continental Drift through the MRCC is a self-educating tour through our concrete world and its abstract representations, discovering distant lives and familiar situations, and embracing the interdependency that links what is usually treated as separate. Continental Drift is intended for anyone seeking to locate global forces in daily life and to reorient aesthetic invention in response to an ethics of equality. So part of the investigation of really a small part of the Midwest was to make this two-week tour, looking at what was there. So we started down here in Urbana. We had a gathering at the local independent media center, which is this giant old former post office that folks bought and turned into a community center. We had a meeting and presentations and discussions there. We went out to organic farms talked with people about the production of organic produce. Then we traveled northward up to Chicago. We had a series of events, discussions, continuing up to Milwaukee to visit the amazing growing power place, if you know about it, Black Holocaust Museum, then on up into Wisconsin, going to other farms, talking with farmers, working to produce a different kind of daily life through production of food, and then back down through Madison and elsewhere. This trip, don't have time to really go into it too much, but the trip is laid out in this book called A Call to Farms, which kind of documents and has writings from many of the people we visited and who took the trip with us. It's free to download. It's easy to find online. But I wanted to talk a little bit more about locating oneself, like the subjectivity, like locating oneself in a place in relationship to a land base or something that gives you a concrete sense of how your daily life is produced. And there are all kinds of barriers to locating oneself in relationship to a place or to a land base. So we have, just to name a couple, we have conceptual and perceptual barriers to locating yourself in a place. So the Midwest is a really difficult thing for us to pin down when we talk about it amongst ourselves, really define where it begins and where it ends. We can show you hundreds of maps like these that all give you a very different definition and conceptualization of what the Midwest is. Here are just some examples of juridical and jurisdictional ways in which the U.S. is carved up. So we have housing and urban development map here, which chops the country up into one way. We have the Federal Reserve districts in another way, U.S. Court of Appeals in still yet another way, FDA in yet another way. It's just kind of mesmerizing. These layers of control, these layers of definition, these layers of jurisdiction, and legislation over our lives. So knowing and understanding these things is a part of the investigation we're making. There's also overlapping ideological definitions of territory. This is one of the favorite maps. We obsess over maps and collect hundreds of them. This is called the Man of Commerce map. And it dates to the 19th century and envisions the US as a circulatory system of a man. And these are the routes of exchange and commerce, with the Great Lakes being, Lake Michigan being the kidney. Of course, we have a cultural elitist map here for articulation of how the country is configured. And then more ominously, this new narrative of mega regions, these like super organizations, kind of superseding state and local boundaries and articulating regions as things that need to be planned and controlled, etc. You get a sense of that. So I really like this quote, a really simple quote from Derek Jensen, who's a radical ecologist and an anarchist. Our current sense of self is no more sustainable than our current use of energy and technology. And I think this is really a key point, and hope to go through a little thought exercise on this with you. So, in addition, our sense of self is both conceptual and spatial. I mean, it's other things as well, but it gets expressed in these capacities. So I have a question for you all. I ask you, it's really simple, where are you from? And my response could be something like this. You probably had a similar response. Urbana, Illinois, United States, North America, the globe. Brooklyn, Manhattan, Toledo. These kinds of responses are almost invariably geopolitical. They're ones that are abstractions away from a land base or any other kind of way that you could relate to the place you're from. They disconnect you from seeing the watershed you inhabit, the flyways of birds that go through your area, the waste sheds of mercury poisoning. Except there's too many things that these kinds of namings abstract from us. When you locate yourself in relationship to natural resources, food sources, consumption, and waste sheds, and other things that make up your daily life, it forms the kind of sense you have of yourself and by extension of the area region you're living in. So this is just a tool. This isn't the only way in which to start breaking down the kind of subjectivity that's forced upon us, I think, on a daily basis. So I could have just as easily said to you, I'm from the Mahomet Aquifer, but it might not have registered because we're so Or you're like, where the fuck is that? And I probably more appropriately should say I am the Muhammad aquifer, because my body is 75% water and I get my water from this source. And it makes up more of me. So in a sense, like, I'm more tied to this thing physically, in my sustenance of my being. So just, again, this is a thought experiment, trying to shift our sense of self and trying to do this collectively to get out of this impoverished, depraved sense of self that thing is imposed on us. Part of that comes from something we've talked about a little bit in various conversations, and this is also a barrier, or this also helps construct our sense of self within current society, and that's the petroleum space-time continuum. And the petroleum space-time continuum is a set of abstractions or ways in which we relate to each other and to time and to space, the production of both, production of our daily lives, that again further abstracts us away from these things that really underneath what define us. So really quickly, I wanted to give you some tips and maybe helping you locate and understand how or when you might be within the petroleum space-time continuum. So when your physical movements through space and time are sped up too rapidly to read the landscape land-based bodily. So this really comes with combustion engines. When you go too fast to relate in a bodily capacity to the area you're surrounded by. When rapid movement through time-space creates infrastructures that disrupt environmental functions for more people than just the ones in your city. So this is a map of the DC sprawl and how the pouring of concrete in these suburban areas is causing flooding throughout the whole region. So this need for speed getting into a center is causing this flooding, it's causing hard surfaces. You might know that you're in the petroleum space-time continuum when this is your watershed and the area you feel more connected with than the actual watershed. So just this cartoon's nice because it actually, bottled water sometimes is twice or more that, the price is twice that of gasoline, sometimes a thousand times markup of gasoline for selling you tap water. You might know that you're in this petroleum space-time continuum and the star is no longer in the sky. So this is a map, a picture of the night sky. This is what our country looks like from space. These are, as you can see, metropolitan areas and concentrations of people and light. When local food options are exactly the same everywhere you go, this is a pretty amazing interactive map that tells you the concentration of fast food restaurants throughout the United States. You can just, this is McDonald's, the distribution of McDonald's through the U.S. More ominous indication that you're in the petroleum space-time continuum is when other people's land bases are destroyed to make yours and mine more comfortable. When entire mountain ranges are blown up to ship coal, whether you call it clean or not, which clean coal doesn't exist, it won't exist. There's this violent extraction of taking somebody else's land base away that happens, a really common thing. So there are more things, but I don't know how long I've gone. Do I have a couple minutes? Okay, I want to finish really quickly. Okay. So I want to finish with this. Another tool that we use for understanding the region we're in. Now, this is a recent map we made of the corn and coal sheds of the Great Lakes Midwest region. And what you're looking at here, and I've got some printed copies if anybody wants to see it up close. The gray areas are the coal fields. The yellow are the corn fields. The corn is mainly produced for grain, for ethanol or its feed for livestock. Very little of it is food production. These black icons are coal-fired power plants. The yellow images are ethanol refineries. And so, in making this map, and sort of We were really interested in visualizing this concentration, visualizing what's here, and making an accessible map to help people see how dense this infrastructure is. This doesn't map nuclear energy. It doesn't map a lot of things. It's really limited to what it's showing. But if you want to start talking about other ways of living, if you want to start talking about alternative energy, if you want to start talking about dismantling, what's there, you're really up against this thing that you need to understand. So the map is an aid for trying to understand that. And throughout this map, we've also put in, you see these little stars, so stars of hope. Alternative energy communities, people working with alternative energy on different scales and in very localized capacity, and some amazing stories coming from those efforts. In Cleveland, there's this Evergreen Cooperative Laundry, a series of cooperative projects where they're using alternative energy to power laundries, paying people living wage to work in these laundries, and using alternative energy to create social justice. We also have a couple pop-out stories of some of the really horrible micro stories of energy production. I just want to share one with you, and it's related to two neighborhoods in Chicago called Pilsen and Little Village, right up here. The coal for these two coal-fired power plants in Chicago, they're in these two neighborhoods, predominantly Mexican American and Mexican immigrant neighborhoods. And I'll get to more about that in a second, but the coal is taken from mountaintop removal sites, shipped to Chicago. There's an enormous amount of waste in getting the coal. It's taken to Chicago, it's burned. The emissions settle on these neighborhoods, increase asthma rates, increase mortality rates, and then the energy is shipped to wealthier communities in Pennsylvania. So all this, it's kind of an amazing story, a really convoluted story. But there's so many more stories like this of how energy is produced, these horrifying results and intricacies of it that we hope this gives a glimpse of. But I think I've talked for too long, so I'm going to stop there. But thank you.